This Marketplace podcast is supported by Invest Puerto Rico. What's next in innovation? That's not the right question. It's where. Puerto Rico, more than just a tropical paradise, it's innovation's paradise, where startups and global players coexist in a vast and vibrant ecosystem, where talent runs deep, highly skilled, and bilingual. Plus, the island offers the most competitive tax incentives in the U.S. If you believe your business can go anywhere, Puerto Rico is the place. Find out more at investpr.org/marketplace. Again, that address is investpr.org/marketplace.
Hey, Marketplace listeners, you know around here we like to think you're never too young to learn about the economy and financial basics. That's why we're bringing the Million Bazillion Live Tour to school to teach important lessons about budgeting, investing, saving, and more. It's all the fun of the podcast, but now live, immersive, and interactive. Special thanks to our tour partner, Greenlight, the debit card and money app for kids and teens. Learn more about Greenlight at greenlight.com/million. That is greenlight.com/million. The politics of this economy can be really, really hard. From American Public Media, this is Marketplace. In Los Angeles, I'm Kai Rizdahl. It is Thursday today, the 20th of April. Good as always to have you along, everybody. We have largely stayed away on this program from the details of the debt limit plan that House Speaker Kevin McCarthy rolled out the other day. And by largely, I mean entirely, because A, our political journalist colleagues are doing a fine job on the details, and B, we are still a very, very long way from anything actually happening. But in brief, McCarthy is trying to get his Republican colleagues to limit discretionary spending, roll back some tax credits, end student loan forgiveness, repeal some new IRS funding, and a whole bunch of other stuff. President Biden and Democrats want what is called a clean debt limit increase, and they want to talk budget stuff at budget time. But here's the thing. The political back and forth is obscuring the economic reality here, because to meaningfully address this country's debt would take some really big and some really politically painful changes. Marketplace's Kimberly Adams starts us off.
There's a whole school of thought that argues having a lot of national debt isn't actually that big of a problem. But it's fair to say much of Congress is not in that camp. Thus, here we are again, fighting over the debt limit. And for all the complexities of the U.S. economy, if Congress really wants to address this, the broad solutions are pretty simple.
On one hand, you can reduce certain type of spending that hopefully will not have these other negative consequences like increasing poverty, increasing inequality, et cetera, et cetera.
Marielle Lopez Santana teaches government and politics at George Mason University.
But on the other hand, you just need more money, right? And how do you get more money? By taxing certain type of people, right? So in that way, the solution might seem very basic.
But of course, the political pain comes when you have to decide who loses benefits and who pays more in taxes. EJ Antoni is a research fellow at the Heritage Foundation.
You have politicians who are all incentivized to go home to their constituents and say, look at all of the goodies I brought you out of the federal coffers.
Promoting more economic growth can help ease deficits, but to make a meaningful dent in the debt, Antoni says both parties need to make hard choices about popular programs, defense spending for one.
But on top of that, we also need to have some very serious conversations about entitlements.
Social Security, Medicare, you know, the things politicians and their constituents really don't like messing with. In Washington, I'm Kimberly Adams for Marketplace.
Wall Street today was down a little bit, but I'm just going to point out here that once the markets start to worry about the debt limit, that is going to concentrate a whole lot of minds in Washington. We'll have the details on the session when we do the numbers. Hey, As talk of recession hangs in the air, are we or aren't we, will we or won't we? Next week's first peek at gross domestic product growth for the first quarter of the year is going to get a lot of attention. We're going to be getting an update on manufacturing as well in the form of orders for durable goods. And manufacturing has been kind of challenged lately during the pandemic especially. So we've gotten Lisa Goldenberg back on the phone. She is the president of the Delaware Steel Company to get a little perspective on these. Lisa, it's good to talk to you again.
It's wonderful to speak with you as well.
How are things in the world of steel?
Actually, they're doing remarkably well.
Really?
And I say that because the fourth quarter was kind of dismal. We got our butts handed to us. And I'm glad we didn't talk then because I never want to be too sad. So I can get to be a little more optimistic today.
I'm sorry to chuckle, but what happened in the fourth quarter and how did it turn around?
I think that manufacturing really slowed down. I think there was a lot of fear of this theoretical recession that we have yet to see. And I think that the increase in interest rates caused a strong pause, as well as some other kind of international factors. I think that we turned the corner, we come back for the new year, and it's like, hey, there's a lot going on. Consumer spending is still up. People need a lot of what I say, quote unquote, stuff, all the things that steel makes and manufactures. And manufacturing numbers continue to look very strong.
Okay, so you're optimistic now. If I call you in, not 90 days, that's too short, but if I call you in 6 months, right, because
don't
we've
worry.
Got...
No, don't talk about 6 months, Kai, because okay. Now I start to
right.
get worried.
Right.
July, everyone has this sort of question mark of what the second half of the year is going to look like. And there's some seasonal slowdown that occurs anyway in the summer months and vacation. And I am concerned for the fourth quarter. I don't think it's going to be some deep recession that everyone's worried about. But for example, in steel, there's been a 62% increase in pricing in the last 4 months. I think that if we haven't seen the peak, we're going to see it in the next 60 days for sure.
Interesting. All right. So a couple of specific things. I don't know if you're thinking about hiring, but if you are, could you? Is labor an issue for you?
I'm not thinking of hiring right now, only because my needs aren't going to be met in that way for my growth strategies. But
Wait. Hold on. So how do you grow and not hire people? Help me understand that.
Well, some of it's sales driven and a lot of it's remote and virtual outside reps. It's sort of a different model. But in manufacturing, labor is unbelievably hard to find. And some of it is the things that you tend to hear about in the press of increasing minimum wage and having it be too expensive and healthcare costs. And for sure, all those things are true. However, I think it's a much deeper, more serious issue in there just isn't labor. If we don't start working with our youth and offering role modeling, vocational training, corporate leadership, as a society, what are we doing with our kids? Yeah. You're just doomed. And then you end up having to pay for it anyway. So we might as well pay for it when they're a lot younger and more hopeful and frankly, more impressionable to the value of paying the bills.
Yeah. Last thing, and then I'll let you get back to running your company. One of the reasons we talk to you, and honestly, one of the great parts about our conversations, I think, is the reality check that you always give, right? You don't horse around. What's your gut on this economy right now?
My gut is that it's a lot stronger than people want to acknowledge. I think that how you feel about the economy and how you feel about your day-to-day life has gotten to be, instead of reality and like gut checking and what it really is, it's gotten to be a political statement. At the end of the day, while many, many, many people are struggling, things are pretty good. Could they be better? Absolutely. Do we need certain policies in place? Absolutely. Does the Fed need to be kept in check and do I worry about interest rates? Of course. But overall, geez, things are pretty good.
Lisa Goldenberg is the president of the Delaware Steel Company. Lisa, thanks for your time. It's good to talk to you. I'm sorry it's been a while, I guess, is what I wanted to say.
It's been too long.
No, I don't accept your apology. All right. All good. Whenever it is, it's all good. It's always great to catch up and hear how things are. And I just love the way you guys present stuff.
Thank you. We'll talk to you soon.
Take care. Thanks so much.
Bye-bye. So continuing with the theme Lisa brought up there, the labor force and training, a passage in the Federal Reserve's beige book that came out yesterday is on point. The St. Louis Fed said investment in technical training has increased in its district. Community colleges are partnering with businesses and buying high-end equipment to better prepare workers for the changing economy. Vocational training like that hasn't always gotten the attention or, honestly, the money that traditional four-year colleges have. But as Marketplace's Stephanie Hughes reports, in this tight labor market, that does seem to be changing.
Hospitals in West Tennessee need more registered nurses, EMTs, and surgical technicians.
Those are the people who essentially are the surgeon's right hand in the operating room.
That's Scott Cook, who hospitals are turning to train these workers. He's president of Dyersburg State Community College, which, by the way, is located in Tennessee in the St. Louis Fed's district. Cook expects more state funding so he can hire additional healthcare faculty.
The more personnel we have, the better we can serve our students, the better we can serve our community.
And there has been more state funding overall for technical and community colleges, says Charlotte Cahill with the nonprofit Jobs for the Future.
Because of the perception that they were best positioned to support students through some of the labor market shocks that we were seeing during the pandemic.
But it can be hard for employers and schools to get on the same page about what skills a worker needs. Yeah, an EMT needs to know how to take blood pressure. But in a field like information technology, it's not as clear.
The sector is changing so quickly that very often credentials aren't fully keeping up with employers' hiring needs.
Still, it's nice that career and technical education, or CTE, is getting more attention. Nicole Smith is with Georgetown's Center on Education and the Workforce.
There was a point in time where CTE was actually almost a bad word. They saw career and technical education as a place for the others.
Now it's a place for everyone. I'm Stephanie Hughes from Marketplace.
Ever since Russia invaded Ukraine, the global energy market has been dynamic, shall we say. There's Russian oil, now a commodity non grata in much of the world. European natural gas was a story of shortage until it wasn't. And given all that, there were predictions that coal was going to make a big comeback. And in this country, at least, that is a story that did not come to pass. Marketplace's Lily Jamali covers energy for us.
January through March are supposed to be among the strongest months in the coal business, says Dennis Wamsted of the Institute for Energy Economics and Financial Analysis.
It's winter. It's supposed to be high demand. Well, that didn't turn out.
Far from it. This winter, electricity generation using coal fell by more than 25% from last year and hit a record low across the country. American utilities are now burning less than half the coal they were using a decade ago. And Wamsted says we're looking at the end of an era.
There is no plausible rationale where I can see coal-fired generation increasing.
Coal has lost its luster, especially as natural gas has seen its price stay low, despite a spike last year when Russia invaded Ukraine. Sonia Carley is a professor at Indiana University.
Natural gas and coal are direct competitors. In some places, you actually see that a power plant can flip back and forth between the two.
Bigger picture, Carley says renewables are getting cheaper over time and grabbing more and more market share from coal. Things are slightly different outside the U.S., though. Flora Champenois of Global Energy Monitor says China and India, among with other populous countries, have had to battle major heat waves over the last year.
And so some of these countries have sort of turned to all of the above, more coal, more renewables.
Whatever it takes to deal with record peaks in the demand for power. I'm Lily Jamali for Marketplace.
Coming up.
You can just see that they're like,
More like, moo. But first, let's do the numbers. Oh, the Dow Industrial is down 108 today, a third of 1%, 33,786. The NASDAQ subtracted 97 points, 0.8%, 12,059.
The S&P 500 down 24 points, about 0.6%, 41.29 there. Today is 420, a day commonly associated with cannabis. And as it turns out, several marijuana-related companies are listed on stock exchanges. Cronos Group, which sells both THC and CBD products, dropped 5.7% today. SNDL Incorporated, which, like Cronos, is headquartered in Canada, is down 3.3%. Tilray Brands, which manufactures and researches medical and wellness applications of said marijuana, declined about 2.5%. Bond prices went up. The yield on the 10-year T-note fell to 3.53%. You're listening to Marketplace.
Looking for the highest interest rate on your cash? At Public.com, you can earn 5.1% APY with a high-yield cash account. And while we can't say it's officially the highest interest rate out there, we can say this. It's a higher rate than Robinhood, a higher rate than SoFi, a higher rate than Marcus, a higher rate than Wealthfront, frankly, a higher rate than Capital One, a higher rate than Ally, a higher rate than Barclays, a way higher rate than Bank of America and Chase, a higher rate than Citi, Wells Fargo, Discover, and it's a higher rate than American Express, too. So if you want to start earning 5.1% APY on your cash, check out public.com. We can't say it's the highest interest rate, but it's pretty darn up there. This is paid for by Public Investing. 5.1% APY as of March 26, 2024, and is subject to change. A high-yield cash account is a secondary brokerage account with Public Investing, member FINRA/SIPC. Funds from this account are automatically deposited into partner banks where they earn a variable interest and are eligible for FDIC insurance. Neither Public Investing nor any of its affiliates is a bank. U.S. only. Learn more at public.com/disclosure/high-yield-account.
This is Marketplace. I'm Kai Rizdahl. Here is today's incomprehensible macroeconomic acronym, CPTPP, Comprehensive and Progressive Agreement for Trans-Pacific Partnership, CPTPP. If that last bit sounds familiar, the Trans-Pacific Partnership, that's because this trade deal is kind of a cousin once removed to the Obama-era TPP that, in the Trump era, the United States pulled out of. Anyway, I mentioned the CPTPP because the UK has just joined it, 11 Pacific Rim countries with a combined GDP of $14 trillion. And for as much trade trauma as the UK has had lately, see also Brexit, Brexiteers in the UK are rejoicing, seeing this deal as a chance to make up for all that trade with the EU that they lost. From London, Marketplace's Stephen Beard reports.
We've just agreed one of the biggest trade deals of all time.
In a snappy video, Prime Minister Rishi Sunak raved about the Pacific Partnership, an amazing opportunity, a major breakthrough. And some independent economists feel the same about the new deal.
The political significance is huge, and I believe that in the longer term, the economic significance will also be massive.
Professor David Collins of City University, an expert on world trade, says joining this pact is a seismic shift, and not just for the UK.
You're talking about the symbolic reorientation of the global economy towards the Pacific, and the UK very much being part of that.
President Obama helped launch the original Pacific Accord as part of his pivot to Asia. President Trump pulled out of that deal, but now Britain has joined the CPTPP in order to pivot away from Europe. Collins believes it will in time prove a big success.
Trade with the Pacific region will vastly exceed that with the EU, because the EU is in a period of economic decline and these parts of the world are in periods of economic growth.
Some Brexiteers are jubilant. On his show, on the largely pro-Brexit TV channel GB News, host Mark Dolan toasted the new trade deal.
The future's ours and the future's bright. Bring on global Britain. With my glass half full, I'll drink to that.
But pro-EU economists have been lining up to downplay the importance of the Pacific Pact.
I think that this is not going to have much economic significance at all.
Emeritus Reader in Economics at Sussex University, Peter Holmes.
CPTPP is big, but it's a long way away, and countries overwhelmingly do more trade with countries that are nearby.
The UK won't make up for lost trade with its neighbours in the EU, he says. On the government's own figures, CPTPP membership is expected to add just 0.08% to the UK's economy over the next decade, while lost trade with the EU could cut anticipated GDP by 4%. Dr. Minako Morita-Jager of the UK Trade Policy Observatory is also scathing about the New Deal.
In terms of economics, that what we can expect is really limited.
Some companies should do well. Scotch whisky makers welcome the fact their product no longer faces a 165% tariff in Malaysia. And how about this company? Clevedon Fasteners, a champion exporter which sells its rivets to more than 40 countries. The boss, Steve Hardiman, voted for Brexit because he said it would unleash the potential of British manufacturing.
Will the CPTPP membership do that? Do you feel that your potential is about to be unleashed?
No, that isn't going to make a vast amount of difference.
Because the UK already has bilateral free trade agreements with 9 of the 11 Pacific Rim countries. But anyway, like a lot of bosses of small companies in the UK right now, Hardiman is more concerned about the home front. Interest on the loans he took out to get through the pandemic has soared. So have his energy costs. And the government just hiked corporate taxes by a third.
So basically, I think there's a hostile business environment at the moment.
You're not in a celebratory mood then?
I am not. You're dead right.
He concedes that if the US joined the CPTPP, which seems unlikely over the next few years, the Pacific Rim bloc could have huge potential. But potential doesn't pay the bills. In London, I'm Stephen Beard for Marketplace.
Rough winter pretty much all over this country. Serious cold snaps, torrential rains, huge amounts of snow. It's been rough for people generally, and it's been really rough for people whose jobs are mostly outside in that weather getting things done. In this instance, taking care of livestock, cattle, which the Department of Agriculture says is a better than $50 billion a year industry. The federal government is offering relief, funding, and supplies to farmers and ranchers in some states that have been affected. And in the meanwhile, those farmers and ranchers are hoping all that bad weather's behind them. From the Mountain West News Bureau, Caleb Radel reports.
It's late morning on a snow-covered farm in western Nevada, and Lucy Reckel has a spring in her step. She manages the cattle operation here at Snyder Livestock Company. She says the cows in the feedlot are feeling good, too, because it's clear-skied and sunny.
They're enjoying it. I mean, they're just like, oh, we'll just stretch out and enjoy this. I mean, you can just see that they're like, ah. Oh.
Sunny blue skies have been rare in Mason Valley this year. Many days have been filled with wind, rain, or snowstorms. And when that happens here at the farm,
the ground very quickly turns to mud. And we had more mud than I have ever seen. And it was very wet, sloppy. So the cattle were just standing in this soup.
Reckel's company has spent about $75,000 and counting just to deal with mud.
So we had to take pretty significant action to get the cattle comfortable.
She rented heavy mining equipment to haul out the mud and paid for the labor and fuel to run it. In a normal winter, Reckel says they'll spend much less, roughly $10,000, on mud removal. Revenue is also a challenge because they'll have fewer cows this year. Local ranchers aren't sending as many cattle as usual to Reckel's feedlot.
Normally in January and February, we would have 5,500 head here and we're down to 4,000. Income will be roughly 2/3 of what it is in a more average year.
Livestock producers across the West are dealing with these same challenges. This winter, leaders in several Western states asked the U.S. Department of Agriculture for help. And in late March, the USDA designated some counties across Wyoming, Colorado, Montana, and Utah as natural disaster areas due to extreme winter weather. That allows ranchers to apply for emergency loans. But Nevada did not have any counties declared a natural disaster area. J.J. Goycochea is the director of the Nevada Department of Agriculture, and says ranchers in his state need help too.
We're just looking for some options for some producers if they do need some help.
One of those producers is John Griggs. He manages Maggie Creek Ranch in Northeast Nevada. He says the harsh cold means cows need to eat more, and they have a hard time punching through the snow to graze.
Cows' nutritional requirements went through the roof because of that cold. And then that snow crusting over, we can't, you know, they can't work their way through it anymore. And they lose condition and strength pretty quick.
That means his cattle are surviving on hay. But the decades-long drought in the West has made hay expensive. 2 years ago, Nevada hay prices were $184 per ton. Ranchers are now paying nearly $300 per ton this year, if they can even find hay in their state, says J.J. Goycochea in Nevada.
Some of these guys that I talked to have went into as far as central Idaho to try and get some hay trucked in. And so it really starts adding up.
Back on the feedlot at Snyder Livestock Company, a line of hungry cows are about to get fed at the trough. Lucy Reckel hopes livestock producers like herself will get the emergency funding that they need.
It's going to cost us a pile to keep these cattle safe and comfortable and then hopefully gain in weight.
Until then, she's hoping to have more days like this one, where these 4,000-some-odd cows can stretch out under blue sunny skies and not be stuck in mud. I'm Caleb Bradle for Marketplace.
This final note on the way out today, in which we read sometimes forgotten economic data so you don't have to. It is Thursday today, which means we got first-time claims for unemployment benefits this morning. They were up a little bit, but that is not what I want to talk about, because in that same report is data on continuing claims. In other words, first-time applicants who could not find a job and so kept on needing benefits. And we don't often mention that. So now I will, because they were up. 1.87 million people in this economy are now making continuing claims for unemployment benefits. Up just a bit, to be sure. But the point is that the labor market is very, very slowly slowing down. The four-week moving average on continuing claims, should you be curious, up every week since October. Alrighty, we are going, but here's your moment of economic context. It is Real Estate Today. The National Association of Realtors said this morning that existing home sales, I always thought they ought to call those used home sales, but that's a whole different thing. They were down 2.4% last month. Here, though, is the kicker. The median price for an existing home, down 0.9% in March from a year earlier. That is the biggest drop since January of 2012. John Buckley, John Gordon, Rick Carr, Diantha Parker, Amanda Petra, and Stephanie Seek are the Marketplace editing staff. Amir Bibawi is the managing editor. I'm Kai Rizdal. We will see you tomorrow, everybody. This is APM.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.